This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Lauren's Barbarian, a sci-fi alien romance, by Ruby Dixon. Narrated by Felicity Monroe and Sean Crisden. 1. Lauren. She's waking up. Someone whispers beside my bed. Everyone play it cool. I rub my eyes with my knuckles and yawn, peering out. I don't have my glasses on, and everything looks like a blur. My head's pounding and fuzzy, and I can't think straight. But I'm pretty sure there aren't supposed to be people in my bedroom. Michelle? I call out sleepily to my roommate. Why are you in my bedroom? It's quiet for a long moment.
Is Michelle in one of the other pods?
Someone asks. It's a man with a deep voice and a strange accent. I don't know, the woman says again, impatient. Do I look like a motherfucking pod whisperer? I know just as much as you do. A hand reaches out and grabs mine, squeezing it. Oh, God, it feels burning hot. Either that or I'm really cold. Actually, come to think of it, it is really cold in my room. My toes are freezing. I curl them automatically and wonder why I don't have any blankets. Honey, listen carefully, the woman tells me. She leans in closer and I see it's a blonde woman in a parka, her eyes a vivid, glowing blue. She's pretty, in an athletic, weathered, spends too much time outdoors sort of way. I don't know anyone like that. My people are more library people. Must be one of Michelle's jogging friends. She squeezes my hand again. I don't want you to be alarmed, all right? You're safe here. We're the good guys. Where's Michelle? How come she let you in my room? I frown, trying to pull my hand away from the woman. Did you turn down the heat? I think she's still groggy, another woman says in a quiet voice. Should we have her drink something? The blonde woman moves away and turns into a blur. I can't see farther than a few feet ahead of me without my glasses, and everything else seems to be moving back out of range. There's a lot of blue moving at the edges of my vision, and I squint, but nothing comes into sight. Annoyed, I lean over the edge of my bed and fumble for my glasses on the nightstand. Except there's no nightstand. Or glasses. And when I roll over, I realize I'm not in a bed. My face smushes up against something that feels like a wall, and I realize about 2 seconds later that I'm naked. Is this one of those bad dreams where you're naked at the mall? Or in class? I squeeze my eyes shut again, trying to reroute my dream. Happy thoughts, Lo. Think happy thoughts. Except my dream doesn't seem to be changing. I cautiously open one eye again, and a blurry blue face and horns? Are those horns? Looms into view.
Is she well?
I bite back a scream, shrinking down against my bed. I push back only to feel my shoulder on the opposite side hit a wall, too. Two narrow walls, and I'm naked. Am I in a coffin? Am I dead? I cry out, horrified. I squint at the big blue-horned face. Oh, my God! Are you devils? Am I in hell? Only if it's frozen over, says the blonde. Yuck, yuck. Liz, scolds the other woman. Be nice. A new face looms into view, and I can just barely make out a pale face and carroty red hair and another pair of crazy blue eyes. A soft, furry blanket is handed to me. Wrap up in this. I'm Harlow. Don't be alarmed. We're the good guys. I promise. good guys? Does that mean there are bad guys? Where am I? Why am I naked? The blonde bites down on her knuckle. So many jokes. I can't. I just can't, though. You're safe, the redhead says again. Maybe we should have planned a speech, the blonde continues. Like, Smurf you very much. Welcome to our village. Liz! I couldn't help it. What? I whisper. I press a hand to my throbbing forehead. Am I high? Roofied? I am way too confused. Liz is just making things worse, the redhead says, and moves closer to my side. She looms in, and her face is pale and freckled, but friendly. She, too, looks a little weathered, and she's also wearing a furry parka. Okay. You're not at home. What did you say your name was again? Lauren, I tell her. But everyone calls me Lo. Have you seen my glasses? Hi, Lo. I'm Harlow. This is Liz. She points at the blonde blur at her side. And I hate to break it to you, but you've been kidnapped by aliens. Aliens? I squint. Now I'm wondering if they're the ones that are high. Not these aliens, Harlow reassures me quickly, waving a hand. Another blue form shifts in the background and someone walks. Oh, God! Those blue things are people? Really, really big people? With horns? I'm not dreaming that. We're the rescue team. The good guys, Liz chirps. Welcome to your new home. My glasses are nowhere to be found. Neither are my pants, or my bed, or anything that resembles my apartment. It seems I really have been kidnapped by aliens. So far, no one's hurting me, so I try to keep my panic to a minimum. I think the fact that I was drugged helps, because I'm not feeling like freaking out. I'm just mostly really tired and drained. Liz and Harlow help me out of my pod and wrap me in yet another furry blanket. They lead me nearby where I sit on the floor amidst a bunch of other blankets. Wait here, Harlow tells me with a pat on my shoulder. Like I'm going anywhere. I can't even see 2 feet in front of me. I try not to stare as some big blue guy approaches and offers me a water skin and a pouch of something that feels like granola.
Eat,
he tells me in a gruff, accented voice, and then walks away a few feet. I'm pretty sure I saw a tail, which is alarming. I shove a handful of food into my mouth and crunch down, watching everyone around me. There are a lot of blue guys, and what's weird is that they don't seem to be wearing much clothing, unless they're dressed in all blue. It's strange because I'm utterly freezing despite the layers of blankets on my body, and the contents of the water skin they gave me are slushy with ice. Maybe I've got a cold. That would explain my exhaustion and confusion. I exhale deeply and watch my breath frost into a cloud in front of my face. Okay, maybe I'm not sick. Is it winter? I ask. I thought it was summer. At least it was back home.
Summer. She is not here. She is back with the others.
The blue alien tells me and then moves away a few feet to watch a blur in the distance. Okay. Now I'm really confused. I take a sip of icy water and nod as if it all makes sense to me and watch as everyone moves around. They're clustered around a dark blob and talking in low voices. A moment later, someone screams loudly, really loudly. I jump in my seat and nearly spill my drink. It's okay, Harlow calls out. Please, don't be scared. Someone grab her before she runs away. There's a big haze of movement, and then the screamer lets out another choked sob before going silent. I stare, eyes wide, and try not to panic. Well, that went well, Liz says dryly. I feel like we need to practice our "we're alien" speech a bit more. Like, maybe we don't open up with "hi, we're aliens."
Let me handle this next one,
Harlow tells her firmly.
Go sit her down with her friend.
The friend must be me. Is this my roomie Michelle, then? Maybe she'll know what's going on. A few moments later, Liz brings another fur-wrapped person to come and sit next to me in the blankets. This one is sniffling and crying, and I get a sense of impatience from Liz before she heads off to help again. Another blue guy steps in and offers the girl next to me her own snacks, and then moves away once more.
Hi,
I whisper to the new girl, once it's clear that she's not Michelle. Michelle has dark skin and short cropped hair. This girl has brown, messy hair and freckles. She's weeping and blubbering in a way that Michelle never would.
Should I be more panicked than I am?
For a moment, I'm kind of relieved that I can't see shit without my glasses.
I'm low.
You're what?
The girl asks, her voice twangy with a southern accent.
Low?
Oh, maybe that didn't make sense. I'm Lauren. Everyone calls me Low, though. Hi.
Willa,
she replies and swipes at her nose.
Do you know what's going on here?
Not really. She leans in closer to me.
Are they bad guys?
I hope not, I whisper, because I don't have any underpants. Willa gives a teary giggle.
Me either.
I start to laugh too, and then we're both chuckling as we eat our granola. It seems like such a stupid but important thing to be upset over. Funnily enough, though, I do feel better being able to laugh over things.
Where are you from?
I ask Willa. I'm from Durham, but I don't think we're in North Carolina because it's really cold.
Arkansas, Willa says. Hot springs.
She sniffs her water skin as if not sure if she can trust it and then takes a sip.
Where do you think we are?
Maybe the mountains? I guess, though I'm not entirely sure. If we are, how did we get here? And why are aliens here?
Do you think we're safe?
Willa asks me worried. I shrug because I really don't know. I think if they were going to kill us, they wouldn't be feeding us and giving us blankets. I tell her. Since that's the most hopeful thing I can think of.
Oh, good.
She sounds cheered up by this.
Lordy, I was about to pee in my non-existent pants at the thought of being killed by aliens.
I smile at her words, though I'm not entirely sure we're safe. Harlow and Liz seem nice enough, but I can't help but think of their eerily glowing blue eyes and the fact that there are only two of them and a lot of big blue males. A few moments later, another girl comes to join us. She stumbles as she falls into the furs, knocking my water out of my hands and tripping over Willa's blankets.
Sorry,
she says quickly. It's okay, I tell her as I scramble to pick up the water before it can leak everywhere. Willa and I help her sit upright, and she pulls her blankets close around her shoulders. I'm Lauren. This is Willa.
I'm Veronica. Where are we?
Y'all's guess is as good as mine,
Willa declares.
How many of us are there?
Veronica wants to know.
Are all of these big black crates people?
I think of the coffin thing I was pulled out of and squint over in the direction where Liz and Harlow are busy. They're surrounded by a few of the half-naked blue guys.
How many of them are there? I can't tell anything without my glasses.
Veronica huddles down next to me while Willa gets to her feet, counting. After a moment, she sits down again and leans in toward me.
I counted 20, and they just pulled a pregnant lady out of another one of them boxes.
20 people. Are they all like us, confused and naked? What the heck is going on? Why are we here? What do these aliens want with us? Better yet, how do we get home?
One by one, our small group turns into a rather large group. We're joined by Nadine and Callie and Bridget, who all seem to be taking things in stride. They've got the same dazed expression I do. Samantha is panicky and slaps away the hands of anyone that tries to help her. Devi is a chatter, and a woman named Marisol decides that I'm the best one to hide behind. She huddles behind me, pushing up against my furs as if she can somehow slide under my skin. I don't complain, because I'm scared too. I can't blame her for trying to find a safe spot. I'm just not sure I'm that safe spot. We're a motley group, I think. Nadine is black, Flordeliza is Asian, and Devi is Indian, I think. I'm also pretty sure Callie is Hispanic, though it seems impolite and silly to ask. What does it matter what someone's skin color is when we're surrounded by blue people? Then there's Tia, who looks to be a teenager. Hannah and Penny and Steph are big girls with bouncy figures and cleavage that even my blind self can see. And then there's Angie. Poor, poor Angie. She keeps touching her belly, her very, very pregnant belly, as if in shock.
Are you okay? Someone asks her.
I think I'm pregnant,
she says, utterly astonished. After that, it goes really quiet. It's clear to all of us that Angie is very pregnant, but if it's a surprise to her, how long has she been asleep? And who impregnated her? It's disturbing, and I get sick at the thought of what that means. If Angie's been impregnated, what about the rest of us?
That's all the females, someone says. Now to get the males.
My throat goes dry on the last of my trail mix. We're a quiet group, everyone eating and trying not to freak out, though there's the occasional panicky sniffle. I think we're all just trying to figure out what's going on. Harlow moves over to our shivering group while Liz stays with the others. As she passes by, I notice she has her hands at the small of her back and her belly juts out from her parka. She's pregnant too.
I wonder if they got her while she was sleeping, too,
Willa whispers, thinking the same thing I am. A big blue blur comes up to Harlow's side and brings her a chair.
Sit,
he demands.
You push too hard.
I'm fine, baby, I promise. She leans into the blue guy, and I realize a second later that the two blurs are kissing.
Sit anyhow,
he demands, earning a chuckle from her. A moment later, Harlow sits with our group on a padded stool. She adjusts her clothes and then gazes into our waiting faces, clasping her hands. Before I launch into everything, because I know it's going to be a little hard to believe, I want you to remember that I'm your friend, and I've been through this, and I'm here to help, okay? When no one says anything, she nods slowly. All right. I'm sure you're all wondering what's going on. I have answers. You might not like them, but I do have answers. Marisol clutches tightly at my back as if bracing herself. A few years ago, I too woke up in a strange cold place, surrounded by strangers. I'd been taken from my bed while I slept and woke up in a new world. Nothing made sense. I was rescued by a very kind group who took me out of a pod very much like the ones you guys were in. She gestures off to the distance.
He's fighting, Liz bellows out. Someone get over here and hold him down. We mean you no harm. Damn it. Fuck off with the hitting.
Several of the big blue aliens rush across the room and Harlow pauses. Willa's eyes go wide and someone else begins to cry quietly. Things quiet down a moment later and Harlow sighs. She rubs her rounded belly and I can't help but glance over at Angie, who keeps staring down at her own like it's betrayed her. I guess it has, in a sense. I was kidnapped by aliens that the others call little green men. They've got big eyes and skinny bodies, and they take human women and sell them on the black market in outer space as slaves or pets of some kind.
Is that what's happening to us?
One girl asks, her tone part horror and part anger.
We're your slaves now?
No, Harlow says calmly. Those aliens aren't the ones that took you. The ones that did were a different kind of slaver, but the crew was not the same. Those slavers landed here trying to gather a few more slaves, and we killed them. Someone raises a hand.
I'm confused. So, the bad guys are dead?
Yes, they're dead, and they're not going to harm anyone. I promise.
Where is their spaceship if you guys stopped them?
You're sitting in it.
Are we?
I squinted at my surroundings, but all I can tell is that it's dark and cold. Really, really cold. I shiver and huddle deeper into my blankets. If we're on a spaceship... So, you guys are going to, what, drive the spaceship and take us home, right? Another woman, Nadine, I think, asks. Is that what this is about? You're going to take us back to our homes? Harlow pauses.
Not exactly. There's a big problem with this. You can't go home. You are home.
Where are we exactly? Are we even on Earth?
You're on a different planet. This one has two small suns and two moons, and it's a little chilly.
She smiles to take the sting out of her words.
But it's a very nice place, and the people here are wonderful, I promise.
Someone begins to laugh hysterically. Samantha.
So, wait, we can't go home? Now? Or ever?
Ever, I'm afraid. Harlow's voice is so gentle. There's no way back.
Bullshit, Hannah says, clearly upset. Samantha just laughs and laughs, as if this is the funniest thing she's ever heard. Someone else starts to cry. Several people, actually.
I'm numb. I don't know what to think. No home? Ever again?
I think of my apartment back near the Institute. Michelle won't care that I'm missing until the rent is due or my pet cockatoo starts screaming for food. Luckily, Nugget is really noisy and Michelle likes him.
My poor Nugget. My poor parents. Poor me. I feel a keen sense of grief for everything I've lost in a flash. I've done nothing to deserve this. But my world has somehow been ripped away from me in an instant. I don't even have my glasses. I've lost everything.
This is bullshit, Hannah cries out. We're sitting in a spaceship. Why can't we just turn it around and drive it back to Earth?
Harlow raises a hand as if to calm her.
I know how you feel. I promise you. I felt the same when I first woke up and realized what happened. But this ship originally came here looking for more slaves. They followed the records of the old crew who had landed here earlier and murdered them. If this ship goes back to Earth, someone's going to take the flight paths and trace them back to this world and make everyone that lives here unsafe. I'm sorry to say that there are dozens of families living here that would be endangered. You guys are outvoted.
There's a low ripple of unhappy murmurs amongst the group. I feel a stab of resentment, too, even though part of me understands it. The other part of me just wants to go home. Marisol shudders against my back. I reach backward and pat her as best as I can.
So, what happens with the ship? What happens with us?
I ask. I can't stay silent. I need to know.
The ship, Harlow says heavily, will be destroyed so it can't fly out again.
There's another murmur of outraged voices.
I know what you're thinking. I'm not happy about it either. But if it means the difference between keeping the children safe, then that's what's going to happen.
This is crap, Hannah says angrily. We don't get a say in... The big blue alien at Harlow's side snarls, the sound low and menacing. Hannah falls silent. We do too.
Rook, baby, Harlow murmurs. It's okay.
Is not okay,
the alien growls.
Our people risk their lives to save them. Many scared. Many away from kids. Many risk themselves. For what?
He stabs a finger in the air and points off to the side where Liz and the others are still working on taming the fighting male.
So that one can bite and try to hurt more?
He glares at all of us with angry, glowing blue eyes.
We all at risk. All. This not just you. This us.
There's a long moment of silence.
Sorry, Hannah mutters.
This is all new for us, says Willa. It's a lot to adjust to.
Please don't apologize, Harlow tells us. Truly, this is new territory for everyone, and we knew it was going to be hard to understand. There were some of our people that wanted us to leave you in your sleep chambers because it was safer for all of us already here. But at the end of the day, we couldn't. That wouldn't be fair to you. So we woke you up knowing that not all of you would be happy to join our tribe, and that not all of you are...
She clears her throat delicately.
Human.
Somewhere in the background, there's an animalistic roar of fury.
What's that? Nadine asks.
That would be not human, Hannah says dryly.
So, you're not lying to us? Samantha asks, moving forward. There's really no way home, and no one else is coming to get us?
Harlow shakes her head.
One-way trip, I'm afraid.
And the men? Samantha asks. How many are human?
None.
Samantha pauses and then starts laughing again. She falls backwards into the furs and keeps laughing, even when she wipes tears from her eyes.
Well, I guess we all deal with grief in different ways. I squint at Harlow.
I don't suppose you guys have any spare eyeglasses around here. I can't see a thing without mine.
Another woman raises a hand.
I need an inhaler.
A second hand goes up.
I'm allergic to bees. I need an EpiPen if you guys have bees here.
Oddly enough, I wonder if they have birds here. I love birds. I'm trying to see the bright side of things, but it's a little tricky.
Where is here? I ask.
Where are we?
Like I said, it's an ice planet, two suns, two moons. Nothing else you'd recognize, I'm afraid. We're all very primitive here, hence the furs. She smiles. But it's a good life once you get used to it. I promise.
There are no cities?
Willa asks.
There's a village. Just one. Jesus. I can't imagine.
This sounds worse and worse all the time.
Doctors?
Angie asks, and her hand strokes over her belly thoughtfully. I feel a quiver of remorse. Even without glasses, I'm still better off than Angie, who's having a surprise baby. Oh, God. I wonder if her baby's even human. I shudder at the thought. Better not think about that.
We have a healer, but she's back with the tribe.
Harlow gives Angie a bright look. Both Liz and I have had children before, so if we don't make it back in time before your baby is born, we know what to do. She turns to look at me. As for glasses, you won't need them.
Is she being funny?
No. I'm pretty sure I need them. I wouldn't even be able to tell how many fingers you're holding up right now. The thought of being stranded on an ice planet without my glasses is kind of terrifying.
Uh-oh, Willa whispers. Don't look now, but red buns at 3 o'clock.
Someone titters and I look over. Sure enough, there's a big, bright red guy standing off next to several of the ladies. He's, endlessly red. There's not a stitch of clothing on him, and I'm kind of bummed that I can't see what his junk looks like. I'm only human, after all. If there's a naked dude, I want to stare, too. Maybe I squint a little. Marisol reaches up and covers my eyes, and Willa giggles. Okay, maybe I was making that obvious. My bad. Like I said, I can't see anything without my glasses. I call out a little loudly, just so they know I'm not a total perv. Just a somewhat perv.
I know. I promise you won't need them, Harlow says again, her voice gentle.
She gestures to the big blue guy at her side, and he offers a blanket to the red guy. Red guy takes the blanket handed to him, sniffs, and then casts it on the ground. Well, alrighty then. Up goes the hand again.
What about my inhaler?
Harlow is nodding.
The Cooey will take care of everything. Inhaler, too. Even cancer. It's all taken care of when you get a Cooey.
It sounds too good to be true. Cooey? What's a Cooey? I ask.
Is that like LASIK? Because I don't qualify.
And I'm not really sure what it does for inhalers.
Well,
Harlow says and wrings her hands for the first time.
No, it's not a surgical procedure. It's a... well, it's a parasite.
2. Lauren.
I can't believe we're lining up to get a tapeworm.
Hannah grumbles at my side. Believe it, sister. Nadine tells her, hopping up and down to stay warm. If it stops my ass from freezing off, I'll take a dozen of them. I'm on board with Nadine at this point. I'm wearing 3 layers of leather and furs, my boots are double-lined, and I still feel like a frozen icicle as we stand in the snow watching a hunt. Or, rather, the others are watching a hunt. I'm watching a bunch of colorful blobs move around in a field of white. We're standing in the snow, our group of humans huddled a short distance away from the others. The hunters are chasing down some big animal called a Sakotsk, so they can get us something called a Cooey. It seems that all living things on this planet have a Cooey, a parasite that helps them survive and keeps them from getting sick. It's what makes everyone's eyes glow the funky blue. Hearing that I'm going to get a permanent parasite, which Liz jokingly calls a cootie, has been a bit of an adjustment. I mean, there's a small bonus in that it'll stop us from getting colds and help us thermoregulate, 2 things that are sorely needed amongst the cluster of humans in our group. I'm starting to forget what it's like to be warm again. Steph and Penny have raging colds, and Willa's nose is so red she looks like a country bumpkin clown. It's cold, It's miserable, it's exhausting. At this point, I welcome my cootie overlord. Of course, there's a catch. There's always a catch. I'm trying not to think about it, though. So I put my hand to my eyes and squint, trying like heck to see what's going on out in the distance. Liz stands nearby along with Harlow's husband, Rook, protecting us. The others, including the tribe's chief, are busy hunting down the critter that's going to give us all our cooties and save us from freezing to death out here. It's been a few days since we woke up now, and it's been an adjustment for all of us. From learning names to learning about this planet to learning, well, everything. I feel like I'm starting from the ground up. There have been nights that I've cried into my fur bunk only to have the tears freeze on my face. I'm not the only weeper. I know Tia cries at night because I can hear her, and there's another sniffler that doesn't admit it by the light of day. Some of us take things differently. Hannah's rather angry about the situation. Samantha just laughs. A lot. Angie's been lost in her own thoughts, but I can't blame her. And Marisol? Well, Marisol hides. Or she tries to, anyhow. But she goes missing a lot, and then everyone goes on a hunt to find her somewhere on the ship. It worries the others because Mardok and Harlow, the experts on the alien ship itself, fear that she's going to get into something that could harm her. I'm trying to take Marisol under my wing to give her courage. At night, we're bunking together to share body heat, and I try to keep her at my side and hold her hand so she knows she's not alone. I kind of wish someone was there to hold my hand and tell me that I'm not alone. But if I can't receive, I guess I'll give. They're bringing it down, someone says, and Marisol's grip tightens on my hand. We stand at the edge of a big snowy field, waiting to be called forward. The ship is far in the distance, and there's so much noise and thunder coming from ahead that it makes me nervous. I wish I was back in the ship, but it's been explained to me that if I don't get the cootie, I'll die. There's something in the air here that's toxic to humans. The cootie works symbiotically, modifying its host so they can both stay alive. And while I'm not really keen on a cootie, I'm pretty keen on being alive. So, here I am.
Someone just jabbed a spear into it, Willa says, and next to her a girl named Raven makes a grossed-out noise.
Staff sneezes. What's it look like? I ask, since I can't see anything but blobs moving around at the edges of my vision.
The Sakotsk.
Ugly, says Willa.
Kinda like if Godzilla and an alpaca mated and had a hairy baby with too many eyes.
Rather makes me glad I can't see it, then. To me, it just looks like a moving blob chased by a lot of smaller blue blobs. Kind of like how Farley's pet Dvisti, Chompy, looks like a skinnier-limbed camel with too much hair and far too many teeth.
Stay with me, Lo,
Marisol whispers and holds my hand tighter.
Of course,
I tell her reassuringly. I know she's scared. I'm scared, too. There's been a lot of scared lately, and every day seems like a struggle to get past it.
Do you think...
Willa begins and then stops.
What?
I prompt. Do I think what? She stomps her furry boots, shaking the snow from them.
I don't know. Do you think we're going to, you know... What do they call it? Reverberate?
Resonate.
Marisol corrects shyly.
That's it. You think that will happen?
Willa looks to me. I don't know. For me, I hope not, I tell them. Because the cootie, the symbiotic tapeworm that will give us electric blue eyes, a built-in space heater and supercharged immunity, also has a catch. It likes pairing up people and making babies. Seems that the cootie will pick out a mate for its person, and you start resonating or vibrating from your chest. Someone else vibrates to you, and that's it. Boom. You now get to make children together, and that's that. I've been told that it's impossible to deny, and that the cootie always seems to pick correctly. Everyone here has resonated happily, including Harlow and Liz, both to blue guys. Also, it seems to be not an if, but a when to hear the others talk. Which worries me. I'm still thinking about my own survival, not about starting a family or settling down with an alien stranger. I decide an optimistic tactic is best. Let's just take it one step at a time. Cootie first. We'll worry about resonating later.
I've never even had a boyfriend,
Willa says thoughtfully, ignoring my cheery advice.
Kinda neat that a cootie's gonna find the perfect guy for me.
Unless he's not a great guy,
Marisol chimes in.
What if he's scary? Like the beast guy?
I shudder at the thought. Jeez, Marisol finally decides to speak up and she's Debbie Downer. Let's not go there. The beast guy is one of the four males that were in pods, along with the 16 girls. Two of them were the bright red, fond-of-being-naked twins. One was a big golden guy who has a shock of golden hair that's so stiff it stands up like a ruff. He's even got horns, someone said, though I can't make them out. And then there's beast guy. He's darker and scarier and scared. And the least human-looking with his hulking shoulders and hunched form. I haven't peered too closely. He snarls at everyone and has big fangs and claws and red eyes, and that's enough for me to stay the fuck away. They keep him tied up and under guard. But Willa doesn't seem upset at the thought. She glances over at the cluster of people a short distance away.
I feel sorry for the beast guy, she admits. I bet he's scared like us. He just doesn't know how to handle it.
I'm not sure I agree. I find his rage unsettling, and I know I'm not the only one. No matter how friendly some of these aliens are, they're not people like us. That much is evident from the tails and the horns, right down to some of the language choices. Liz calls her husband her mate, and their children kits. They eat their meat raw, and it seems they have a healer who does the whole laying on hands thing back in their village. To these people, Summer is a person. I've been told she's nice, and not a season. I'm not even sure they have seasons other than cold and colder. Every day that passes, the unreality of our situation seems to grow.
Come.
A voice yells out, and I recognize that of the Chief Vectol. He's the big blue guy, all the others follow.
Come forward and receive your cooties.
That's us, Willa says breathlessly. Shall we go?
I hesitate because there's no turning back once we get this cootie thing. It'll let us live here, but it'll also change us forever. What if I resonate to one of the fierce, angry-seeming strangers here? The only one that seems at ease with the situation is the big gold guy. But even he seems intimidating. I just don't know. And again, I'd like to see. And be warm. And, you know, not die. Damn it. Let's get this over with, I guess.
Here, take my sleeve, Willa offers. Watch your step. The snow's churned up around here.
I hold on to her, and Marisol holds on to me, and we form a human chain, along with the other humans marching forward. One of the big red guys has an arm around pregnant Angie, and I feel a twinge that I didn't help her out. I should have thought of her. I'm glad someone did. Off to the side, three of the big blue guys are half-dragging the beast guy, who's tied up with ropes and snarling, still fighting against them as if his life depends on it. For a moment, I want to do the same. I feel out of control, pushed in one direction after another by fate. I don't blame him for fighting and snarling and trying to break free. But Marisol's squeezing my hand tight and Willa's leading me forward, and off in the distance I know the others are waiting. I know they're doing their best to help us out. So I go. I don't have a choice, in the end.
No resonance for you, huh?
Hannah gives me a sympathetic look.
Disappointed?
Nope, I tell her, spooning more soup into my bowl. We're all back inside the ship, sitting in the mess hall after the day's hunt. We're all still recovering from receiving our cooties. The moment mine touched my neck and slipped inside me, something I prefer not to think about, I went unconscious. Happens to everyone, I'm told. Now that I'm awake, I'm noticing a few things. One, I feel like I was hit with a sledgehammer. I'm exhausted and achy all over. Two, I'm freaking starving. I could eat a whole cow if someone put one in front of me. As it is, I'm just chowing down on all of the stew I can spoon into my bowl. I'm not the only one. The Red Twins have been back for fourths and fifths. Three, I'm no longer freezing my ass off. It's a little chilly outside, but it's far more comfortable. Like a crisp fall day. Cold, instead of naked in the Antarctic cold. No wonder Harlow and Liz seem so unbothered by the chill weather. Four, I think my eyesight is improving. Just like they promised, instead of nothing but blobs, the stuff closer to me is starting to take better shape. It's not much, but it's a start. I can see Hannah's face, and she's pretty. She also looks glum. Disappointed that you didn't resonate? I can't help but ask. Hannah makes a raspberry sound.
Me? Please.
I wouldn't blame her if she was. It's hard not to think about right now. Veronica, clumsy, plain, quiet Veronica, sits next to the big golden guy, the lion-haired one. They're resonating. It started apparently the moment that Veronica woke up and hasn't stopped since. There's a low thrumming purr coming from both of them, and it's so loud that everyone can't help but notice. Veronica looks shy and embarrassed. The big gold guy looks as if he wants to eat Veronica up with a spoon. I didn't want resonance for myself, but it's kind of difficult to ignore how he's gazing at her. Even with my crappy eyesight, it's obvious that he's utterly fascinated with her, and every time she twitches, he reacts. I suspect if Veronica would let him, he'd try to feed her. I watch them surreptitiously from my seat. Even from here, I can see how bright red Veronica's cheeks are. The big guy's sitting extra close to her, and as one of the Red Twins walks past, he stiffens and gives him a furious look for daring to stroll nearby. He's practically bristling with possessiveness. At my side, Hannah sighs. She sees it too. Yeah. If you'd ask me, I don't want resonance. But that kind of attention from a hot, sexy guy is tough to pass up.
You think they're going to share quarters tonight?
Hannah whispers between bites of stew. I shrug. It's none of my business. Though I admit, I'm super curious too.
Oh, please, Hannah says. It's a small group. It's everyone's business. Look at how they're all watching them, too.
She nods at the doorway, and I notice that there's a bunch of blue guys standing nearby, arms crossed. They are watching Veronica and her new boyfriend, too. Chaperones. Good. I'm actually happy to see that. It means that even if Veronica wasn't interested, which, damn, she'd be crazy not to be, no one's going to force her into anything. It makes me feel better. I shovel a bit more stew into my ravenous belly. Did anyone else resonate? I ask, since Hannah seems to have all the deets.
Nope, just those two.
I think someone's got her eyes on one of the red twins. What about you? I look back behind me carefully where the very naked red twins are sitting. No one's sitting at their small table with them in the mess. They both eat hunched over their bowls with grim, methodical shovels of their spoons into their mouths, as if they're in a hurry. Neither one looks at his food, either. They're too busy watching everyone else. One looks in my direction, and I hastily turn my attention back to my food. I don't want to be caught staring. Seems rude, especially when one of the parties is naked. They seem nice. I can't think of anything else to say. Hannah snorts. And Cujo's just a dog. She's got a point. But I'm trying to stay positive. We've got enough to worry about right now. Everyone's dealing with all of this differently. Some people are kind of nosy about all of it. I finish my food and glance around. Have you seen Marisol or Willa? They're not eating. Hannah shrugs. Crap. I bet Marisol's hiding again. She's struggling with change. Not that I blame her. I think I'll go see where they're at. Talk to you later. Don't forget that we're arriving on the shore tomorrow, Hannah reminds me. Last day of ship life before we go all primitive. She twirls a spoon in the air. Goody. Right. The ship is slowly crawling over land right now, and we'll be arriving at the coastline of the ocean in the morning for part two of our rescue, in which our new friends promptly destroy the only spaceship we have. I don't think anyone will be forgetting about that. Thanks, Hannah. I'll remember. Like I can go anywhere in the meantime. What am I going to do? Jump out of a moving spaceship and hope to strike out on my own? I put away my dishes because the tiny dining area in the ship feels a bit too cramped with so many people inside, and I go to look for Marisol and Willa. Willa's on her way back to get more food, an empty bowl in her hands. Are you not eating with the group? I ask her, curious. Is everything okay? I brought Gran some food. I don't think he's been eaten, Willa tells me in that soft drawl of hers. Gren? Who's Gren? We've met so many people in the last few days that they're all starting to run together. I mentally try to place the harsh-sounding name with one of the alien faces. You know, Willa gives me an exasperated look. The one they keep tied up. That's Gren? I shudder. Remembering those bright red, now blue, eyes, and the feral anger on his face. Are you sure that's safe, Willa? He's not exactly happy about being here. Are any of us? She shakes her head, her expression full of sympathy. He's just as freaked out as I am. He just shows it in different ways. He needs a friend. Here I was thinking he needed tranquilizers, but maybe Willa's right. Still, I don't trust it. Just be careful, okay? We're all in this together, she tells me simply. He's lost his home, too, and everything he knows. And now I feel like an ass. I smile at her. You're right. I'm just worrying. I peer past her and then ask, You haven't seen Marisol, have you? I think I saw her running down one of the back halls. I bite my lip. Thanks. I better find her before the red twins eat all the stew. And I'd better get my friend a second bowl. She holds her dishes up, smiles, and heads on. I pause, wondering if I'm being unfair. Gren really does creep me out. But if Willa's learned his name, maybe that's the first step to calming him and being his friend. I know the others are more concerned about him harming us than caring for him overall. We've got too many people that are too helpless right now. I get it. We're in a triage situation,
You take care of the most urgent stuff first and then worry about the trickier stuff later. I know Harlow and Liz and the others are feeling overwhelmed. I can see it on their faces. Liz looks like she hasn't slept in days, and Vectol, the chief, seems frayed at the edges. The hunters are either constantly watching over us so we don't get hurt, or hunting to feed and clothe us. Harlow and Mardok and Farley are racing around the ship trying to salvage as much as they can before we trash it all in a blaze of questionable glory. 20 newbies is a lot to bring into a small group, and everyone's pulled to their breaking points. Which is why I'm trying to help. Which is why I need to find Marisol. I head down the hall once more looking for her. I start peering into any human-sized nook or cranny on the ship, trying to think like a frightened woman. If it were me, where would I hide? I'd try to find the last place anyone would look for me, of course. Someplace dark and quiet, and that I could disappear into and just hide away from all my problems for a bit. I think for a moment, and then head for the cargo bay.
Are you lost, Lauren?
One of the big blue guys, Zolea, I think, asks as I pass him in the hall. He seems friendly enough, his expression open and honest. He has long, messy braids, and I remember him telling the others yesterday that he misses his mate, because she usually fixes his hair for him. I remember that, and I remember him talking about their kit together. It makes me trust him a bit more, weirdly enough, to hear that he's got a wife and family, and he misses them. But I'm pretty sure Marisol wouldn't appreciate the alien company. She's still skittish around all non-humans. I'm just looking for my friend.
Do you need help?
I shake my head. I think she's scared and hiding. Realization dawns on his face.
Ah, that one. Marisol.
Poor Mari. A legend already. That's the one. I'm going to find her and bring her back to the dining hall. He nods.
I'm heading that way. Come find me if you need help.
I will. Thank you, Zolea. He grins to hear his name and looks boyishly human for a moment before he gives me a little nod and then heads onward. I relax. Maybe they're people just like us after all. Of course, as he turns, his tail flicks back and forth as he walks, and that quashes that thought pretty fast. Human-ish, maybe. Not quite human. I wait for him to leave and then head into the cargo bay. I pass by each of the pods, running my hand along the surface of one. How long was I in here for, I wonder? How did they take me without me knowing? What would have happened if no one had come to wake me up? I shudder at the thought. Even now, though I'm not thrilled to be stranded here, I'd rather be awake than in limbo, unaware of anything. That seems like a special kind of hell. One of the pods in the back has the lid pulled over it. I move toward it, keeping my steps noisy enough that I won't be sneaking up on Mari. When I come to the side, I hesitate, and then knock gently. It's me. She opens the lid a peek and looks out at me with teary electric blue eyes.
What?
I came to see if you're okay. I tell her gently, pushing the lid aside so I can see her. Everyone's eating but you.
I'm not okay.
She sniffs, swiping at her cheeks.
I woke up on a strange planet, and someone put a parasite in me. Why would I be okay with any of that?
I know, I say, patting her shoulder awkwardly. I feel like you do. I'm overwhelmed, and I don't know what to think. But it's better than being stuck in limbo.
Is it?
She shakes her head, wiping away more tears.
Because at least then, I didn't know what was going on. At least then, I wasn't afraid.
Mari presses a trembling hand to her forehead.
I wish no one had woken me up, you know. I don't know that I can handle all this.
She waves a hand at our surroundings.
I'm not brave like you.